Hello and welcome to the Label Sessions Presents podcast. Label Sessions is the world's leading innovation expert network. In this series, you will meet some of the most interesting leaders anywhere, from across the worlds of business, design, tech, culture, and sustainability, all signed to the Label Sessions roster. To find out more about our work, helping brands and institutions around the world take on their big challenges for the future, head to labelsessions.com to find out more. For now, enjoy the podcast.
Great to have you on the podcast and part of Label Sessions now. If we look at your profile, we see Director of Innovation and Asset Manager, being a Chief Digital Officer in the past, and obviously you're based in Santiago. Before we get into all of that, can you just sort of introduce yourself to our audience and your kind of career so far?
Yeah, absolutely. I study business. Have a master in business administration too, and so I'm not as interesting because I'm from the commercial side. Let's say business administration. I'm not a technical engineer that came into the innovation and digital world from that side. So it's business oriented. I've worked in lots of companies, consumer goods and industrial companies, and my first experience with financial services started with Principal in 2008. And so I've been here for 16 years, actually, next week. I've had seven different roles within the company. I spent 4 years in Des Moines, Iowa, which is where our head office, the Principal headquarters, are based. So had the opportunity to travel the world working with Principal, because we have operations in 70 countries. So it's been an amazing ride, and I love every minute of the what I do. So yeah, that's me. Very passionate. I do play golf, and I like that a lot. I like Chilean wines, and I would love to learn about your whiskeys.
Yeah, okay, good. We can make that happen. So certainly at some point, definitely. So it's interesting, as you look at financial services just now, what excites you? What do you think is interesting that's happening in this sector right now?
The thing that gets me up every morning with a lot of energy is how easy digital has made financial services. Today, you can, buy an investment, buy an insurance, buy any products, even open an account with just a couple of clicks, which not so long ago, it was a lot of work. It was papers, it was signatures, it was face-to-face with people, meetings, parking, all that. Today, with just a couple of clicks, you can make that happen. And that's very exciting. I always tell the story that, when I was young, when I was a kid, my dad used to give me an allowance in bills and coins, and he gave me a piggyback. And so once a month, he would come with two bills and two coins, and he would make me put into the piggy bank one bill and one coin. And so that was the way he taught me how to save. But today, with my girls, that's not relevant anymore, because money is not a piece of paper. Money is digital. Money is a click. And so teaching people about financial services today is very, very extremely challenging. And I have taken as a personal challenge teaching my daughters how to deal with the financial services world. Because today they're young, but at some point they're going to need to have a mortgage. They're going to need to have, an investment, a life insurance or something. And the way that we have operated is changing dramatically. So
it's almost two sides of the same coin, right? In terms of there's the simplicity, which you're finding exciting, but with the simplicity of opening up a product becomes almost some dangers in some way, like the kind of barriers aren't there in the same way. It's an interesting moment.
Absolutely. And that's the other side of the coin is the financial education. People just don't like you said, people don't read. It's so easy that they just start clicking, blah, blah, blah. And then they buy products they don't need. They buy products that are not exactly for them, that are not the best for them. They're expensive. And that's very, very poor and very bad financial decisions. And so everything about simplicity, everything about financial education really excites me and gets me up every single morning.
It's interesting too. So that's a very kind of customer-led excitement, or a very kind of customer-led kind of agenda. There's lots of, I suspect that there's lots of directors of innovation in this kind of space who might have, in answer to the question of what's exciting, would have talked about a tech thing or a kind of infrastructure thing. Is that because you don't mention those things because you think they're overhyped, or do you just think these other things are more where your heart is?
Well, as I said at the beginning, my background is business led, so it's customer facing led, and that's where my expertise is. And at the end of the day, I think it's where everybody should be placing and putting attention, because people, I always say, people love magic. Most people don't like or don't understand and don't want to understand how magic is made. Financial services is exactly the same. Everybody, wows themselves when you can open an account with a couple of clicks. What happens on the back of that, people don't really care. And I guess they should not care. It's okay. It's that's part of the work that we as financial services companies should be doing. You know, how we make this simple, easy, but with the right education, so people know exactly the type of decisions they're making. That needs a lot of work, because for the most part, financial services companies are all very old, legacy companies. And so doing everything digital, doing everything easier, it's not easy. It's not simple. It's just very hard and it's a lot of work. But that's the magic.
Let's pick up on that, because you haven't been in financial services all your life as such, but now you're leading innovation in a financial institution that is global. Will have aspects to it, I suspect, that are quite traditional, and it's certainly quite regulated as a sector. So, how do you think about leading innovation in that context and creating an environment where new ideas can thrive?
Because financial services is touching money and it's touching people. Regulation is very, very severe, very strict, and it should be, and I think it's okay. The nice thing about regulation, and here's probably where most people, think negatively about regulation, is that they say we cannot do this or that because of the regulation. And I have a couple of good examples of times where we thought the regulation needed to change, and we went and pushed it, and we made the change with technology. And the regulators, of course, they understand. And when this benefits the consumer, they're open. So for me, it's just challenging, but it's not a wall that you can, or not a mountain that cannot be climbed. We can push that line. It's a lot of work, of course. And sometimes people don't want to take that work, because it's slow, you need a lot of conversation, a lot of politics involved, and it's a lot of work. And most of the people want the easy path, and it's like, it's regulation does not allow us, so we don't do it. Okay, we have taken and our teams have the position as like, if this is the best for the customer, we're gonna move that line. If we need to talk to the president, we're going to talk to the president. It's okay, because this is the right thing to do.
Interesting. There's a phrase we use sometimes internally. We talk about, some teams sometimes have a bit of a sort of learned helplessness. I get a sense that they kind of learn that if you just say, hey, it's regulation, then you can just stop the conversation, Whereas actually, sometimes the role of an innovation leader is to be the person, like you say, who goes, well, actually, this is the right thing for the customer, and I believe in that, and I'm prepared to go through the steps to try and make a thing happen.
Yeah, absolutely.
So, I mean, do you think about that as an innovation culture, or is it more hard kind of, structures that you need to put in place to start to make those things happen?
It's innovation culture. I definitely think that, it's all about, again, how how people think about these things and the energy, and if they believe they can change the world. Like, you know, if someone comes in and says, you know, this is too hard, you know, requires a lot of things, and even we have to change the regulation, it's like most of our teams would say, well, okay, let's do it. You know, this is the type of challenges we want, we like. So I think that's the culture within Principal, and we have been able to build that culture. This is, you know, people learn how to be innovative when people, because innovation is not, you know, it's not like I wake up one morning and, oh, I have a good idea and that's it, I innovated. That's not innovation. That's the romantic idea of innovation. Innovation, it's a lot of work, it's hard work, and it's a process. And a process can be taught, can be benchmarked, can be measured, can be improved. And so that is basically the approach. And we have created innovators and spread this innovation culture across the company. And I believe that's the key, because you know, it's just me trying to move the world. It's going to take me forever, but I'll try to do it. But instead, we have 10,000 people. In the case of Chile, in particular, we have 2,000 people who are Principal employees that have a different mindset, and they'll not take a no for an answer. And you build that, you work with that, and so anybody can do it with the right team, with the right guidance, with the right mindset, and with the right support from the very top. Anybody can do it.
Mm-hmm. It's interesting. And what do you see as your role as the director of innovation? I mean, are you guiding the culture? Or are you kind of stepping into projects at different times? Well, what do you think that role means?
Oh yeah, it's hard because you play different roles. I wear different hats. So of course I wear the hats of I talk to people. I bring expertise. I bring the experience of the process. I become a psychologist from most of my stakeholders, of course, because, you know, this is so hard. We have never done this. Why change? You know, all that more soft part of the culture with innovation and the people. I help them through. So I'm kind of a guide. So I take them through the process. And then I become a CFO when we have to put numbers into this, because, you know, innovation needs to be needs to drive measurable value for the customer on efficiencies, on the processes. But if this is not, like, you know, a nice idea that didn't bring any value, then that's not the type of innovation that we are looking for. And so I wear the CFO, I talk to the stakeholders, to the board. And so I sometimes feel like the own CEO that, you know, is driving some things. So I do play a lot of roles. And basically what we're trying to do is, on one side, create that culture one by one. Basically it's a lot of work, especially at the beginning, creating that culture. Then as you have numbers, results, then it's easier, the buying is easier. We get more support, you know, and that grows from there. But at the beginning, it's a lot of work. So yeah, I do play a lot of roles.
And do you see, because it's different places, some places sort of see the innovation function and the director of innovation as the kind of the person who starts things, and others see it more as a kind of enabler. So when you spot a good idea somewhere in the business, you're trying to find a way for it to survive or be incubated properly. Do you have a sort of sense as to where you think the role should be, or where you think the function should play?
I don't know. I would tell you what has worked for us, and the way that we believe, because we believe innovation is something that everybody should be entitled to do, and everybody should be doing. It's not about me or, you know, a small group. This is something that everybody, you know, operations, accounting, the legal side, of course, product, customers, everybody should be doing this, because we believe that is the way to approach innovation and create this innovation culture. We have that role of more an enabler rather than anything else. We want to teach people, because you know, you ask people, do you innovate and do you want to innovate? Everybody would say yes. Well, then why don't you innovate? And the answer, at least in principle, in our organization is because I don't know. I don't know how to do it. I don't know where to start. I don't have resources. I don't know. I don't have budget. I don't, you know. And so what we are trying to do is teach everybody, you know, a process. We create the governance around it so anybody can bring in ideas and take them through the process. The first time, of course, we guide them, hoping that there's a second time where they can actually do the work on their own, change their mindset, and eventually they can help us spread this practice with their other teams and closer teams. So that's we believe we're more an enabler than any other.
That's interesting. And let me pick up a sort of key theme in that as well. So you've got another thing you wanted to add there.
Of course, we do have and sometimes when we do pilots and we do testing and when we do connections with the ecosystem, for example, we do handle that from the innovation team. So it's easier. We get more power. We get powerful in the relationships with startups, with incubators and all that when we have the relationship. And so then anybody in the company, instead of going on their own, they just come to us and then we can connect them easily and make that faster and all that. But so, and then of course we do have some budget that where we can help to incubate specific ideas that are a little bit more disruptive or more transformational rather than more core to the business. But yes, so we do have that too. But the way that I like to see innovation is more as an enabler rather than anything else.
It's interesting though, in terms of that role as an enabler, one of the things we sometimes see when we go around lots of different companies is that there's a point sometimes a CEO or a leadership of a company gets really enthusiastic about innovation and the process that's been introduced, and they talk about the word experimentation. But what then happens is an experiment goes wrong. Or you learn through a process, but you learn that this thing isn't going to work that you've just spent 6 months working on. Is that something you recognize? Is that something you've had to face into in your journey as an innovation leader?
Oh yeah, of course. And we're not there yet. I do not have a good and perfect answer for that. But at the beginning, of course, failure is something like a forbidden word. You know, nobody's hired here to fail. And as you can see, when you take a look to the goals that everybody has on their teams and the way that they manage their work is based on their goals. And so you need to, I don't know, save X amount of dollars, sell X amount of dollars, bring in onboard X amount of customers. So it's very specific metrics. And there's no space for, I hope you try, and if you fail, but you learn something, it's okay. There's no room for that. And so, of course, it is a process. It is a process where when I remember when we started with our practice 7 years ago, we came to the board and we said, you know, because the nature of the work that we're going to do is totally new to the organization. We're looking into new technology. We're looking for things that customers are not even aware they need. So it's new to everyone, to the market, to the organization, to our infrastructure. It's new. There's a chance that we do not get it right the first time, or even the second time, or even the third time. So because of that, we're going to start very small. We're going to do incremental steps. We're going to spend few amount of dollars. We're going to bring in a very small team, and we're going to be learning, you know, from those experiments. And at some point, we believe we're going to get it right. We're going to get it so right that we're going to be first in the markets or unique to the markets. We're going to create something so spectacular that this is going to drive all this value. But we need to have the space to eventually fail in this process, which for us is not failing, it's just learning. But the way that the organization, traditional organization, sees that progress is, oh, you tried once, you failed. Like, no, we learn. Now, were you able to sell? No, then you fail. Well, wait, but we learned that the right approach was not over here, was over there. And now, you know, we're building from there. So it takes time. And of course, if you don't have the support of the senior leadership to do this, then it's a lost battle. You know, it's just that won't happen. Like, if you don't have the support, don't even try it.
And that chance that you might fail, I mean, that's the R word, that's risk. How do you think about risk?
Risk is absolutely part of the work that we do at Innovation. It's just part of the work that it comes with. And because I always say that there's three things that make up an innovation opportunity. The first one is something new to the market, to the organization, to the customers, but new. The second one is that it drives meaningful and measurable value, efficiencies, customer experience, revenues, profit, I don't know, but numbers. And the third one is risk. If, you know, they come to me with, we want to change our CRM platform. Okay. So, it's new. It's a new CRM platform, and it's going to, you know, make us save a lot of money. Okay. Is there any risk in there? Not really. It's just a change of, you know, providers. Like, okay, go and execute. This is not an innovation project. This is about execution. You have execution risk, but this is not an innovation opportunity. Like, so the risk part is key to make up for a good innovation case. And it's embedded in the work that we do. And because it's embedded, there's things that we need to get right from the very beginning. So engage the right stakeholders. So if there's a legal component to a regulatory component to what we want to do, day one, we bring the right people to the table to form that team. Second, because there's risk, reputational risk, financial risk, whatever risk, we make sure that we take this very seriously. And we map all the risk. We're not, you know, daredevils here. We're just running out with knives, like, you know. But we manage risk. We don't stop because of the risk. We try to manage risk. It's just part of the work.
Interesting. One of the things that gets most discussion in response to these podcasts and also all the kind of media we put out at Label Sessions is always, partly people realizing across sector what's actually quite similar and sometimes what's very different. And the other thing is different parts of the world and the differences between them or the similarities. Now, you've worked, obviously, you've been a leader both in Chile and in the US. Do you notice there's differences in terms of the way people think about innovation or the culture that sits around innovation?
So I would answer that in two parts. I would say the consumer part and I would say the company part. Okay, so enterprise part. So from a consumer lens, I would say that US markets are very different from Asia and for sure Latin America, because consumer markets are way more developed in the US. So way more sophisticated. The type of problems innovation is trying to solve in the US are very different and more sophisticated than the problems that we have in Latin America from a consumer lens. You know, Asia, Latin America, the unbanked population, the financial education, it's very low. And so that's not the same case in the US. So from a consumer perspective, the type of innovations that you see are very different. I would say that we are solving in Latin America and in Asia, we're solving for more basic needs. And the US is solving for more sophisticated needs, which does not mean that the US is way far behind, which means that basically that the Asia and Latin America are now jumping ahead a lot of years in terms of developing, you know, experiences and innovative solutions. So it's just very, very interesting. So that's from one side. From the enterprise side, at least from the company that I work for, I would say that because those companies have been around for so long and they've been very successful, senior management in those companies are very old school yet. So all the ideas, all these processes, all the, you know, the failure conversations, the innovation conversations are, I would say, even harder in the US than in other markets. And in the case of Latin America, because we were a smaller group of companies within the group, we were able to move very, very quickly compared to what happened in the US. So I would say that depending on the management and how old the companies are, I would say that you're going to be able to see different levels of innovation in different parts of the world. And I believe that, and based on what I see, I believe that Latin America is very, very ahead in some things compared to some other markets, especially the US.
Yeah, I would certainly say from a zoomed out perspective, for us looking at it from the UK most of the time, Latin America is a really interesting kind of space for fintech just now, I think. Partly, maybe in some ways, because the dynamic is there's a lot of companies, big and small, taking on challenges kind of for the first time much more in Latin. So there's less, whilst there's always legacy infrastructure and financial services, but it's much more... It's kind of, you know, it's companies solving new problems for consumers that maybe people have been faced and got a whole set of attitudes around in the US and Europe. But in Latam, it feels like people are kind of saying, okay, let's start again. If we were to solve this problem, start from here. It's really interesting to take that whole walk through your career. We've got a few quick fire questions just to get to know you as a person a little bit. So the number one is, what's the most useful website you know to stay on the pulse of your industry?
I follow one. It's a local website. It's called Chocale, which, you know, when you do like this with your hands, you know, I don't know what that, you know, but like a fist bump or something like that, that's called Chocale. Okay. So Chocale.cl, it's a financial services, and just it financial education, site. They do very interesting research and very nice, interesting, easy reading articles around, you know, how to get a loan, what's the best credit card, or why you should be using this or that credit card. It's just like Nerd Wallet in the US. That's another one that I like a lot. And in the UK, you have the Money Supermarket that I also like a lot. Those guys are trying to do that financial education piece in just natural language, you know, just common basic language with apples to apples type of comparisons. Financial services are hard. We have made it even harder through the years with all our, you know, disclosures and regulation and in the sake of, you know, keeping us compliant. We have made it. We use a very weird language, and that's not the language that most of people, you know, just talk. So these sites, they make a good job. I do believe they make a very good job to put all those financial problems and financial products into day-to-day situations, apple-to-apple type of things. And just, I regularly, you know, have my girls kind of read some of those things. They're like, yeah, okay, I get that. Like, okay, read one of our contracts. Like, you forget it.
Okay. What's the one thing that will always cheer you up?
When I get one of my daughters to say, I started saving a little bit more in mutual funds, for example, and I did it on my own. Oh my God, that makes me very, very happy. But on a more professional note, I would say that every time we receive a customer comment, for example, a review or a call on our one of our you know, call center or anything, where we can actually solve for or, you know, receive a thanks for solving for something or make it easier for a customer, yeah, that's amazing. And that, as I said at the beginning, that keeps me up every morning, just jumping out of my bed, and how we can make it easier and better. Oh, definitely.
That's a very nice answer. And then I've got to ask you the final question, which we ask everybody, and is always a strange question, but it's all part of our thing, which is on a scale of 1 to 10, how weird are you?
So being 10, the weirdest, I would probably, you know, mark an 11. I don't know. I consider myself very weird. But good weird, like, you know, and professionally, I've been called the troublemaker, you know, and I love that. I love that because I know I play a role in my organization. I'm the one that pushes the board, pushes the executives and the senior management, you know, to cross that line and experiment. And so because I have been fortunate that in some of my endeavors, we have been successful. Not all of them, of course, but in some of them, I have some, I would say it's some validation. So when I come in, they expect weird from me. They expect new, they expect trouble, but they know that because of the practice that we built, they know that we are taking care of, and we're serious about this. We're not just, you know, throwing away money and putting the company in risk. So I am very weird. I consider myself very weird, and I love it.
I like that. You're very weird, but seriously weird is what you're saying. With a purpose.
Yeah. Absolutely.
That's excellent.
As we close out another episode, make sure to like, subscribe, and follow us on our social channels. Want to access Label Sessions for your brand? Whether you want to build new products, access world-class mentors for your team, or reinvent the way you attract talent into your business, visit Label Sessions to find out more.